We present Mary Wimbush as The Governor's Consort by Peter Tinniswood.
A volcanic outcrop. You are actually taking me to a volcanic outcrop.
That appears to be the case, my dear.
I shall quote from my gazetteer accurately, as always. St. David's is an island situated in the South Atlantic. Population 438, area 97 square miles. Economy, freezing fish. Dear God, Wilfred, the whole place will stink of kippers.
No, that is not the case, my dear.
What?
Kippers are smoked, Edith. Kippers are not frozen.
A volcanic outcrop. At an age when I should be blowing out nightlights for a clutch of damp-eyed grandchildren, I'm reduced to living on a volcanic outcrop. My forebears, Wilfred, have served king and country loyally and faithfully for five generations. Blood, family blood, has been spilled in fighting the Ashanti, slaughtering the Zulu, and biffing the living daylights out of the fuzzy-wuzzies. Chaste young wives have withered and waned in the Malay archipelago. Young scions, upright of body, pure of soul and spirit, have been castrated by Afghans, garrotted by Berbers, and disemboweled by Baluchis. And you are taking me to a volcanic outcrop.
It will be a lovely voyage for you, my dear. You'll meet extraordinary people on board. Characters, yes, you'll meet characters. You've always liked characters, haven't you?
Oh, yes, but of what substance will they be, these characters, Wilfred? All the characters you've brought into my life have been creatures of terminal flimsiness, flickering shadows on a cracked mirror, faint whispers in a steel-shuttered cell.
Yes, my dear. And you'll enjoy boat drill, too, you know. Oh, yes, you'll certainly enjoy that. You look really sumptuous, really regal in your bright orange life jacket.
The dark smells of bones and pointless deaths. I feel so strange. I feel so light-headed. I see the ship at its berth, and its lights in the darkness glimmer like the glints in a maniac's eye, and I see it setting sail on a voyage fit only for the insane and the long unfulfilled. I look a perfect fright in a life jacket. I always do. This voyage is going to be a long, lonely nightmare.
Welcome aboard the Atlantic Wormer, Sir Wilfred.
Thank you, Captain McWhirter. Most kind of you.
And you too, Lady Edith. I hope your voyage will prove a constant delight.
I doubt it, Captain. I doubt it very much. Solitary travel is total anathema to me. We left Cardiff on an evening of scudding, mean-minded, meagre-lipped Welsh rain. We passed by the Isle of Lundy. Why couldn't I be the governor's consort on Lundy? Why couldn't we send up maroons and rockets? Why couldn't we send up distress flares? How lovely to be dashed to death on the rocks of Lundy. How fulfilling to have one's bleached bones pecked by Lundy crows and one's frustrations and misery scoured by a Lundy gale. Why aren't we dining, Wilfred?
It's etiquette, my dear. Before we dine, we have to wait for the captain to join us.
Captain? That little squirt with his ginger eyebrows. I've never, ever in the whole of my life seen a man with so many thumbs.
Shush, dear. He's coming.
Don't you shush me, Wilfred. I am not the sort of woman to tolerate being shushed.
So, Wilfred, Lady Edith, a thousand apologies for my absence from this culinary conglomerate. Navigational problems, you see.
You have my sympathies, Captain. My husband has been a sufferer from that complaint all his life. I'll have the soup of the day, provided it isn't cream of celery. And please don't touch the bread rolls with your fingers. Dinner was a disaster. Saddle of lamb. What it was all saddle and no lamb. And as for the bread and butter pudding, I think it started life as a poultice for a yak. After dinner, I left the men to their dribbly-lipped port and their hoarse-throated brandy. I wandered alone through the warm, throbbing, pulsating bowels of the ship. I felt like a plump, bewildered termite, or a fatal, thin-eyed virus searching for the weakness that would wither and destroy the organs and the cells. Father died of a virus. I watched him fade away from his life. "I've been invaded, Edith," he said to me softly. "Enemy troops, first the scouting parties, then the foot soldiers pouring out of their trenches, and now the slow, relentless bombardment of the gunners and the staff officers waiting to parley for my surrender. Bloody fool. He'd never been in the army. He'd spent all his life in mustard. Later, I made my way to the cabin.
Edith? Edith, are you awake?
Go to sleep.
Certainly, my dear. Edith?
Yes?
I'm well aware I've been a disappointment to you.
Go to sleep.
I know I could have made a go of things in the Gilbert and Ellis Islands, and you can't blame me for Malawi.
Nyasaland. To me, it will always be Nyasaland.
I know, my dear. That was the whole crux of our troubles there.
Go to sleep, Wilfred.
Yes, my dear. It's not bad. It could be worse. Governor of St. David's. There are worse things in life, Edith.
It's a volcanic outcrop.
I know, but you can't blame me for that.
I don't. I just blame you for being you.
How splendid to be up and about on deck. Pity about the total absence of gannets.
Oh, shut up. I padded round the deck. I prowled. There were fishing boats on the horizon. When I was a girl, we called them smacks. I liked having my bottom smacked when I was a little girl. I'd like someone to smack my bottom now. A windsurfer would be nice. A muscular windsurfer with a sleek, hairless chest. A Cumberland wrestler would do at a pinch, I suppose. Or one of those chappies in a crusty kilt who tosses the caber and...
Good morning, Lady Edith.
What?
I was bidding you good morning.
Oh.
And what a splendid morning it is.
Is it?
Oh, yes. The barometer's steady, the wind is in the southwest quarter, and the sea temperature is above normal for the time of year. May I tempt you to a drink?
What?
Not in my cabin. That will come later. I thought you might repair to the saloon. Yes. We'll repair to the saloon, shall we?
Who are you?
The name is Erwin Spofforth. Dr. Spofforth. Doctor of Literature at the University of Manchester. Bachelor by status. 67 years of age. Presently residing in Llandudno, North Wales. My compliments on your teeth.
I beg your pardon.
Your teeth. Excellent. They do you great credit.
Oh, thank you.
Not at all. It's my pleasure. Waiter, waiter, over here.
Yes, sir.
I should like a... It's Delgado, isn't it?
Yes, sir, that it is.
Didn't I teach you at...
Yes, sir. 7 years, sir. I came top in woodwork. My sister, she got 7 babies and she ain't been married once.
Lucy. Her name's Lucy.
21 years of age and fat as an old sow, she is. The men flocks round her like beetles to a pile of dung.
She sounds... Well, she sounds...
Oh, that she do, missus. That she do indeed. Particularly when she's making babies and there ain't no wind to muffle the shrieks.
I hear it yet, Delgado, I hear it yet. Bring us 2 medium sherries immediately.
Certainly, sir.
You're wondering how I know Delgado, Lady Edith?
Yes, yes, I am, as a matter of fact.
He is a St. Davidian, a native of St. David's. I was headmaster of the school on the island for 12 years. It was the most delectable period of my life. The women there have the most sublimely loose morals.
I beg your pardon?
I had 7 mistresses, and all without exception had the most woeful teeth.
My husband, Wilfred, is a dapper man of opaque manner and talent. We married 6 years after the death of his first wife. Her name was Hilary. She was captain of lacrosse. She had a nose like the handle of an aloof umbrella. Her voice would have startled rotting cornflakes. She was fearfully proud of her pubic hair. I didn't think it was much to write home about. I enjoyed my drinks with Dr. Spofforth. He is what I like to call a mine of information. As far as information is concerned, I should describe my husband as a dried-out waddy. This cabin is most fearfully small, Wilfred.
I know, my dear.
Dressing for dinner is like trying to pluck a pheasant in a left luggage cubicle.
Yes, my dear. Edith?
Yes.
You know that brassiere thing you wear?
Yes, what about it?
Nothing. It's just that I rather like saying the word. Brassiere. Brassiere. It's a word that rarely crops up in official communiques from Whitehall.
That evening I ordered the revolting Captain McWhirter to invite Dr. Spofforth to dine at our table. How he talked. It was like listening to someone faintly interesting on the third programme of the BBC, only the reception was so much better.
The island of St. David's was discovered in 1502 by the Portuguese explorer João da Nova Castelo.
I hope you've got that down, Wilfred.
Yes, dear.
Good. Carry on, Dr. Spofforth. No, as you were, Captain McWhirter.
Yes, Lady Edith.
We do not eat peas off our knife. Peas are eaten off our fork. Dr. Spofforth, if you please.
Certainly, Lady Edith. The island was annexed and occupied by the Dutch from 1631 to 1654.
Isn't that just typical of the Dutch?
In 1654, the island became the property of the East Indies Company and was transferred to the direct government of the British Crown by an Act of Parliament in 1832. Is this meat pork or is it beef?
Beef. At least it was when it came out of the kitchen.
That evening in our cabin, I undressed with a certain languor. Not my style at all, languor. I allowed Wilfred to sniff my brassiere. He seemed well satisfied and went to sleep with a smile like a crack in a parsnip.
The indigenous music of the island, said Wilfred.
Ah.
We can look forward to four more weeks of it.
Good God.
The crew of the Atlantic Roma are all indigenous to the island. It is their custom to play music in the afternoon for the entertainment of passengers during the entire length of the voyage.
Is it not possible to shoot them? Our cabin steward is called Hector. Apart from his cauliflower ears and a slight speech impediment, I can find no fault with him. Oh, why don't you take me in your arms, Hector? Love me, caress me, crush me, stroke me, whisper to me, blow softly into my ear. Captain McWhirter smells of dung. He smells of the dung of small, frightened nocturnal mammals. The first officer picks his nose constantly and says yum, yum when they dish up the food of an evening. The chief engineer scuttles hither and thither. If I'd had children, a girl and a boy, I should have called them hither and thither. I should have poked them coldly with my forefinger. Traitor. That's a nice name for a boy. Traitor. The crater of my being has no echoes. Doesn't drip. Doesn't gulp. It's dry and arid like the inside of a dead kangaroo's pouch.
Edith? Are you asleep, Edith?
No. Why do you ask?
Well, I was wondering if when we arrive at St. David's, you would consider wearing maroon slacks.
For the first week, we sailed through untroubled waters. We established a routine. Hector brought us breakfast in our cabin at 7:30 sharp. I took a shower in the nude and then prowled the decks for three quarters of an hour, surveying the bleak vastness of the ocean and watching the chief engineer scurrying hither and thither. At 11, I partook of bouillon and cream crackers. At 11:30, I repaired to the saloon, and there I talked to Dr. Spofforth. Oh, how I talked, when I could get a word in edgeways.
I am returning to the island to die, Lady Edith.
Yes,
seven mistresses I had on that island, and not one child did I spawn.
Well, you can blame your sperm count for that. In my experience,
the highest point on the island is known as Skipper's Peak. It rises some 800 metres above sea level. In the autumn, its summit is shrouded in mist, and wild goats bleat unseen. There's a shepherd's shelter. One day I shall climb up to it. The door will be flapping niggardly in the wind. I shall step inside. I shall lie down on the earthen floor. And I shall slit my throat.
Amazing what a chap can do with a squeeze box, isn't it?
What's that you say?
I'm talking about music, my dear.
Ah.
I've always loved music. Signature tunes, that's what I like most in life, signature tunes. In the good old days, they used to have signature tunes on the World Service of the British Broadcasting Corporation. I loved them, Edith. I adored them. I could never remember which programs they belonged to. Have a go, Joe. Was that the Brains Trust, I wonder? Much Binding in the Marsh. Ah, how I loved that tune. Dear old Tommy Handley.
I think there's a lot to be said for the dum-dum bullet, don't you? Breakfast, elevenses, luncheon, afternoon tea, dinner, supper. So it went. We saw a yacht and a whale. I developed a slight rash under my left armpit. We were dogged by our wake. So it went.
I detect a certain disappointment in your life, Lady Edith.
Indeed.
If only, if only.
Ah, yes. If only, if only.
If only, if only.
If only. That night, 10 days out of Cardiff, my husband died. We'd had a most agreeable dinner. Dr. Spofforth had entertained us vastly with anecdotes about the early life of the professional cyclist, Reg Harris. Captain McWhirter had amused us with his recollection of the bordellos of the Spanish Main. Wilfrid did not take supper. He excused himself on the grounds of flatulence. I went up on deck and gazed out to sea.
Nice, isn't it?
Delgado, what are you doing here?
Getting away from the smell of farts.
What?
Where I sleeps, missus, down in the bowels. That's all you gets to keep you company, the smell of farts and sweaty feet.
Just like an English public school.
What?
You're a very handsome young man, Delgado.
I knows. I got hairy thighs and soft brown eyes, and I got a tongue what sighs when stuck in the ears of willing ladies.
I see. Do you like thighs, Delgado?
In their place, missus. In their context.
I see. My husband seemed to have lost his thighs somewhere along the way. It happens with men of a certain age and a certain background. Do you like breasts, Delgado?
Pointy ones or blibbery ones?
But
ones that dangle or ones that thwack you under the nose?
I'll have to think about that. I can see the man in the moon.
He ain't a man, missus. He's my sister Lucy, all pocked in the face and looking constipated.
You have a lovely way with words, Delgado.
I have a lovely way with everything, missus. You wants to try me sometime.
Yes, yes. What are you doing here, Delgado? Really? Really? What are you doing here?
Nothing. Just looking. I likes looking.
So do I.
What else you like doing, missus?
I like... Well, I like being me.
Yeah?
Yes.
What's it like being you?
I wish I knew, Delgado. Do you mind if I spit over the rails?
What?
When I was a girl, we had a gardener called Tarleton, and he spat immensely and copiously. Great globbits of spit he used to arc out from his mouth. How they soared, how they sparkled. Poor Tarleton. He married an Italian. And then I spat. I spat over the rails copiously, immensely. And I imagined the silver globet coiling and cavorting down to the bottom of the sea, where it would be kissed and nuzzled by icy, blind, naked fish. When I got to the cabin, I discovered my husband lying dead in his bed.
Legend has it, Lady Edith, that this funeral dirge was gleaned from a band of itinerant Brazilian minstrels who were shipwrecked and washed ashore on St. David's in 1783.
It reminds me of home when I was a girl in Shropshire.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. When I was a girl in Shropshire, we lived out years and years of black and white half-timbered summers. The springtime was full of wild curlews being silly in the hills. In the autumn, there were fat sheep wagging fat tails and cropping fat grasses. And in the winter, we flew kites and held up our armpits to the cold, bleak rain. I liked being a girl in Shropshire.
Did you indeed?
We once had Sir Edward Elgar to tea when I was a girl.
Did you really?
He played the piano.
After
he'd finished, I presented him with a posy. "Thank you," he said. "Thank you so very much, young lady." He smelled of mulberries.
"Same again, sir."
"Yes, indeed, Delgado. Two more glasses of Skipper's Peak cocktail. But this time I think you could be slightly more generous with the white rum and slightly more niggardly with the creme de menthe."
I had a choice. I could either bury my husband at sea or bung him in the deep freeze until we reached land. I chose the latter course. I have to confess, however, that I was attracted by the burial at sea. I'd never witnessed a burial at sea, and I thought it would be so much more fun if the principal participant was someone one vaguely knew. However, wiser counsels prevailed.
"Bung him in the freezer, missus. Bung him there and have done with the bugger."
"Are you by any chance Welsh, chief engineer?"
"Yes, missus. Born and bred in Dunvant. My old man, mind, well, she come from Bargoyd and..."
"Oh, shut up, you obnoxious little runt. That night we had a party. We all got rather blotto. I danced with Delgado. I threw up my skirts and I danced and I danced and I danced.
"Twirly this way, missus. Twirly that way."
I danced with Captain McWhirter. He held me tightly round the waist and pressed his thing into my thighs.
"Oh, God. Oh, God, I'm a glutton for punishment."
And then presently I went out on deck with Dr. Spofforth. Did you say your Christian name was Gilbert?
No, my Christian name is Irwin.
Did you say you had 8 mistresses?
No, I said I had 7, and all of them well endowed and severely wrinkled.
Poor Wilfred. Not one single mistress did he ever have in the whole of his life.
How sad.
When I first met him, he was on leave from Ceylon.
They call it Sri Lanka now.
I am well aware of that, Dr. Spofforth. He was on leave from Ceylon, and he had hiccups. He had a dry cough, too. He kept coughing all the time into a burgundy silk handkerchief. I was a young woman in Shropshire, and I was ashamed because Mother insisted I wore a vest. I was standing in the...
Look! A shooting star.
What?
A shooting star. See? Over there. Just passing across the mainmast. Why do shooting stars never cross my mainmast?
I was standing in the drawing room next to the baby grand piano, and he walked in with Hilary. "Edith," she said, "I want you to meet Wilfred. We're engaged to be married." "Congratus," I said, and I felt my vest begin to ruck.
"Are you wearing a vest now?"
"No, why do you ask?"
"Because I have a certain penchant for ladies' vests. May I hold your hand?"
"No." "Yes. Yes, you may hold my hand." He took hold of my hand and he held it. Not tightly, he just held it. That's how a hand should be held.
"My father was a convicted murderer."
"My father was in the colonial service."
"Ah.
That's why I was born in Burma. Do you know Burma?"
"Only by reputation."
"Me too. We left when I was 2½, you see."
"Ah. Thus is the whole mystery explained of an instant."
I wanted him to take me in his arms. I wanted him to make an extremely improper suggestion. Wilfred never made an improper suggestion to me in the whole of his life. He'd have thought it improper, do you see? He was a model of propriety, was Wilfred. I had these dreams. I saw him making love to Queen Mary, dressed in nothing but a brown bowler hat and canary yellow spats. I saw him nibbling the shoulder blades of spindly dancers from the Ballet Rambert. I saw him biting the soft, pliant toenails of Somali whores and writing love letters in blank verse to the daughters of Macedonian insurgents. On her deathbed, Hilary said to me, "I'm relying on you, Edith. What for, I said? To look after Wilfred when I die. He just won't be able to cope. She died, and I looked after Wilfred. It was duty at first sight. What did you say your father did?
It doesn't matter. He's long since been hanged.
The storm broke in all its fury the following morning. My golly, how it broke! Hector fell over and broke his arm in two places while bringing me breakfast. The chef was struck on the head by a cast-iron saucepan and was taken unconscious and gibbering in Flemish to the sick bay. The lady from the purser's office with her Birmingham accent and her scuffed wrist was washed overboard. I can't stand the Birmingham accent. It makes people sound so gormless. And all the time the wind howled and shrieked, and the seas pelted and plundered, and our ship was tossed and turned, heaving at its belly and shuddering in its spine. I wasn't seasick. Not once, not a hint of it. I refused to give in. I was elated. I wasn't myself. Not for a moment. I was thrown hither and thither by the motion of the ship. I crushed my shoulders in the companion waves. I was hurled bodily into the air from sofas in the reading room. I had red-hot courgettes spilled into my lap in the restaurant. And the wind bayed and bellowed, and the sea was simply furious with itself. There was no one about, not a soul. Once I met Delgado and he said,
I got something to tell you, missus.
And what would that be, Delgado?
You got a belting pair of tits on you.
Thank you. I'll bear it in mind. 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, the storm battered us like a dying wolf with its belly slit. Each morning I visited Wilfred in his freezer. He looked so happy with life, so contented, so benign, so fulfilled. It was as though he'd achieved his destiny, laid out there next to the dead shoulders of mutton and the stricken sides of bacon. He looked in harmony with them, and they seemed genuinely to like him. Wilfred, I said to him, we're in the most fearful storm. He seemed to smile in his cocoon of icicles. Wilfred, I said, Delgado says I've got a belting pair of tits. He seemed to be in agreement. I swear a flush of pride came to the cod cold slab of his face. Wilfred, I said, the captain's raging drunk. He's locked himself in his cabin and he's cackling like a hyena. And I swear a smile came to the icy crevasse of his mouth. I was ecstatic. I was delirious with happiness. I was sublimely solitary in my raging passions. You don't get storms at sea when you're a girl in Shropshire. When you're a girl in Shropshire, you don't get swarthy men with brittle eyes and snaring gums saying to you,
by God, I wouldn't half mind licking your bum.
Dr. Spofforth. What's happened to Dr. Spofforth? With his baggy houndstooth trousers and his bottle green leather watch strap. I hadn't seen him for days. What if he'd been struck on the head by a cast-iron saucepan and was gibbering in Flemish? What if he'd been washed overboard, locked in the arms of the purser's assistant with her Birmingham accent and her scuffed wrists? I decided forthwith to confront him in his cabin. Hello? Hello? Anyone at home? It's me. Are you there? Have you been washed overboard? Have you been...
Come in. Enter.
I entered. He was sitting at a table playing draughts, and he was totally nude except for a pair of brown plimsolls. Dr. Spofforth, I didn't know you were a fan of draughts.
I'm not. I'd much rather have plimsolls.
Wilfred. Wilfred, can you hear me? I've got something to tell you, Wilfred. Last night I went to Dr. Spofforth's cabin. Do you know what happened? You'll never guess. We had dingy-dongies. He took his plimsolls off. I think you call them pumps in your part of the world, don't you? Well, he took them off, and I took off my clothes, and we... It was lovely. First rate. It was much better than when you and I had dingy-dongies. He seemed to mean it. You know what I mean, Wilfred? He didn't seem preoccupied. He's well into his 60s, and I'm, as you well know, well, I'm... It was lovely, Wilfred. You'd have really enjoyed it if you'd been him. Oh, by the way, the captain's committed suicide.
We'll bung him in the freezer. Well, we'd never get him overboard in seas like this, see? Tip him over the rails, and next thing you know, he'd be doing bloody cartwheels all over the poop deck.
Mrs. Mrs.
Yes, Delgado?
How old are you?
Never you mind.
Good. I won't.
Wilfred. Wilfred, can you hear me? I had dingy-dongies again last night with Delgado. You remember him? He's the steward in the saloon with itchy trousers and the... No, we didn't have dingy-dongies. He just took me back to my cabin, and he stood at the door fiddling with his tie-pin, and I said, "Would you like to come in, Delgado?" And he said, "No, you're too old." So I locked the door in his face and ate half a slab of peppermint chocolate. You'd have been really proud of me, Wilfred. Do you want me to move Captain McWhirter a bit nearer to you? Or are you happier being on your own? I am. I'm always happier being on my own. Happier? Happier than what, I ask myself. The storm hurled itself at us. Its savage teeth whipped the waves white and sent the spume over our decks, screaming and raging and snarling. It was lovely. I felt so calm. It was lovely. I was in control. I was in command. Ho, ho, my hearties, we'll abandon St. David's. We'll press on round the Cape. We'll forge our way into uncharted waters. We'll discover new lands and cowering natives, wobbling their lips and daubing themselves in dung and flaying their private parts with blood-scarred leather thongs. Look, lads, there's an ostrich with 5 legs. There's a woman suckling a salmon with 7 heads. Giant plovers flute. Geysers fume and spit in their winter mist. Bison lower and glower, encrusted in shards of wicked ice. When I married Wilfred, I had but one ambition in life. I wanted to be the lady of the Governor-General of Tasmania. In Shropshire, as a girl, Tasmania had been my constant joy and my lonely delight. Van Diemen's Land, how gorgeously ferocious it sounded! Mother taught me a song that the poor aborigines there used to sing in the simple glades of their sopping woods. It's wattle blossom time, it's springtime. Bird whistle, the birds are whistling. Spring come, spring has come. Cloud sun, the clouds are all sunny. Bird whistle, the birds are whistling. Dance. Everything is dancing. Springtime, because it's springtime. Dance. Everything is dancing. Lagaratoo, lagaratoo, lagaratoo. Spring, 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 because it's springtime. Wilfred? Wilfred, can you hear me? Are you paying attention? The storm's gone. It's flat calm now. When Father had his virus, there were storms and calms. There's a hurricane, force 12 on the Beaufort scale, Edith, he'd say to me. And then he'd say, it's flat calm, it's like a duck pond, I'm getting better. Nobody gets better in life. The lunatic weather always closes in. The maniacs slither at you out of the gales and the blizzards. The madmen gibber when the sleet sleeks. I've had a cable from Whitehall. They sent me their condolences. They mention you too. Wasn't that nice? I have a choice, they say. I can disembark at St. David's and stay there a while, or I can continue on the ship to South Africa and fly home from there. What would you do, Wilfred? What would you do if you were me? Did you ever want to be me? I often wanted to be you. When you first kissed me in London Zoo by the cage of the Tasman Devil, I wondered what it was like being you. I wondered how my lips felt against your puckered, mustardy kisses. On that first night of our honeymoon in Florence, sorry, as you were, Venice. On that first night in Venice, I wondered what it was like being you when you fumbled with me and prodded at me vaguely. Oh, Wilfred, it must have been awful being you.
Yum, yum, saddle of lamb. Mint sauce too, yum, yum. Delgado.
Yes, sir.
More bubbly. Bring us more bubbly.
Yes, sir.
Bubbly. The drink of the gods, eh, Lady Edith? Lovely, lovely bubbly, eh, Dr. Spofforth? Hey, carrots and sprouts. Yum, yum.
We went out on deck, Dr. Spofforth and I. There were icy circles and festering spirals in the sky. The lifeboats creaked in their cradles. I thought of blind, naked fish and small seabirds fluttering and fluting.
May I hold your hand?
Yes.
Only a week before we reach St. David's.
Yes.
They'll roast an ox for us.
How nice.
They'll play their music, and they'll dance, and they'll sing, and the lovers will creep away into the shadows, and when the fiddles stop and the accordion squeezes out its last sigh, you'll hear their groans, and you'll hear their grunts and their wild cries.
Wilfred looks terribly comfy in his freezer.
Good.
I have an urgent desire to join him there.
Ah.
In the freezer they have giant tins of baked beans. I've never seen so many baked beans in the whole of my life.
Would you care to join me in my cabin?
They've got tins of spaghetti hoops, too, and monster jars of Branston pickle and sandwich spread.
Come to my cabin, Lady Edith.
I smacked him across the face. Hard. I smacked him really hard, and the ship shuddered and the moon twirled, and I thought I heard it scream faintly on the surface of the water.
Four more days and we'll be rid of all this bloody music.
Is that so, Chief Engineer?
Bloody dagos, that's what they are. A load of dagos and half-chats. I never seen bints with such airy faces. I never seen so many airy legs and scrawny... You don't fancy coming to my cabin, do you?
And after I'd whacked the Chief Engineer, Wilfred, I whacked poor Delgado. I whacked him so hard I felt his mother's teeth rattle. I never whacked you, did I, Wilfred? Not once. I wanted to. Do you remember that time in Dar es Salaam when the gecko watched us as we dingy-donged, and the houseboy snuffled in the yard, picking at his navel, and our noses writhed to the scent of cloves, and... It's lovely. It's lovely talking to a dead man. I could make good friends with the dead. Clement Attlee and I would be just like that, terrific chums. I don't think I'd go a bundle, though, on William Ewart Gladstone. What a shit. Poor Tarleton. When I was a little girl in Shropshire, I once slapped his face. He hadn't done anything wrong. He was working on a sluice gate by the unhappy lake. I sat down on the grass-crazed bank and watched him, and I felt so happy and so content. And he turned to me, and he smiled, and he nodded, and he whistled through his thin brown teeth, and he chipped away at the great rustling sluice-gate cogs and heaved at the ratchets and the gears. He was a totally, completely, utterly happy man, and I knew it, and I felt proud and privileged to be in his presence. And then I did it. I stood up, walked across to him slowly, and slapped him hard on the face. He didn't say a word. He didn't move. I raced back to my bedroom and I cried and I cried and I cried.
Yum, yum. Jam roly-poly with custard. Thick, glugly yellow custard. Yum, yum. Hey, lads.
I wonder if I may have a word with you, Lady Edith.
Certainly.
I'll get Delgado to bring our coffee to the saloon.
And two large glasses of Skipper's Peak cocktail, if you please.
But of course.
It was warm and snug in the saloon. The leather sofas wallowed like contented hippos. The clustered bottles behind the bar glowed like a flock of gaudy tropical parrots. The panelling creaked and the engine throbbed broodily. We were alone.
I have something to say to you, Lady Edith.
Then tell me.
I think you are going slightly mad.
Slightly, Dr. Spofford, slightly. I'm going completely bonkers.
Ah.
My dear Doctor, this is a ship of the dead of mind. This is a ship of the mad, and I am the commodore of the fleet. We plough the oceans, and in our wake sail the argosies of our miseries and our humiliations. I send the ships in my convoy signals. I badger them, I harry them. Keep in line, keep in convoy, keep your station. Keep up with me, don't fall back. On days of flat calm, I go out in my pinnace to them and lunch with the ghosts of my childhood and dine with the maniacs of my maturity. We gorge ourselves on unhappiness and despair and quaff great draughts of bitter spittle and spume. Thank you, Delgado. Two more glasses of Skipper's Peak, if you please.
Certainly, Mrs.
Your father is ever present in my thoughts, Dr. Spofforth.
Really?
He was hanged, I believe, poor chap.
Yes.
I feel the rope bite into his neck. I hear the crack of his spine. I see the plum flush of his swelling tongue. Why? Why did I never do this before? All those miseries, all those indignities, those humiliations, those crushing disappointments. And I tried to treat them by being sane. Poor Wilfred. He should have got Singapore. He should have got Kuala Lumpur. He would have been perfect for Port Moresby. Why didn't we both go mad, joyously and gloriously? You gibber to me, darling, and I'll gibber to you. When I was a girl in Shropshire, there was a lunatic asylum not 3 miles down the road from our house. Tarleton used to take me there in the pony and trap to watch the inmates cavorting and cackling in the gardens. He'd hoist me up onto his shoulders, and I'd look over the old mellow brick wall, and they'd be there on the lawn, feeding like storks. I'd pull faces at them, and I'd stick out my tongue and put my thumbs behind my ears and waggle my fingers like an arthritic bat. "Don't let your mam know what we've been up to," Tarleton would say. And we'd clip-clop back home down the drowsy lanes, with the old pony nodding his head like a madman, and the flies whirling like dervishes, and the setting sun cackling crazily to itself in the straight jacket of the skies.
We must be passing another ship. Shall we go on deck and see?
That would be lovely.
There she is. Doesn't she look perfect, all lit up and her wake glowing in the moonlight?
Yes, she reminds me of Hillary.
Hillary?
When she walked up the aisle to marry Wilfred, she looked just like that ship. And Wilfred in his grey morning coat looked like a lonely, aged gunboat escorting her to the safety of the muddy creeks of his mind.
Stay with me on St. David's, Lady Edith.
What?
Be my mistress.
What?
We'll build a stone house with stout walls and a mansard roof. We'll build it in the lee of the cliffs overlooking the harbour. And we'll watch the men in their long boats going off to fish in the wallowing Atlantic swells. And we'll wait for the steamer with its mail and its monster tins of baked beans. And we'll sing songs in the firelight and stroke each other's limbs softly.
And when will you kill yourself in your shepherd's hut?
Any time you like, Lady Edith. Any time at all.
I quite like the idea of dying. I think it's rather like running out of sugar when the shops are closed. I suspect it's like losing your spectacles or suddenly thinking the Queen's a chump. I like the royal family. I think it's fearfully regal to have relations, don't you?
Yum, yum. Chine of pork and apple sauce too. Yum, yum.
Two more nights to go, Lady Edith.
Yum, yum.
Have you thought any more about the proposition I made to you?
I have.
And?
How large is this shepherd's hut, Dr. Spofforth?
Oh, quite large, Lady Edith. Big enough for two.
One more day and one more night to go, Wilfred. I've led my convoy safely home. We're sailing through placid waters. The dead and the mad are as happy as Larry. I'm happy too, Wilfred. My brain is as sharp as the splinter of an iceberg. I can see the continents of our past parting and realigning. Everything is so clear. The wolf doesn't howl, the bat doesn't blunder in its cockeyed cell. Everything is clear to me. It would never have worked out in Nyasaland, my dear. You were never cut out for Singapore or Kuala Lumpur. And most important of all, neither was I. The governor's lady. Would I have made a good governor's lady with my gaffes and my rudeness? Would I have smiled at fools? Could I have chatted to oafs in limp Panamas and their ladies with lust-wrinkled bosoms and jangling wrists? You had such plans for St. David's, didn't you, Wilfred? You were going to build an ice hockey stadium and a museum for the visual arts. You were going to institute a sanctuary for work-worn donkeys and endow a retirement home for distressed gentlefolk. And, Wilfred, and you were going to build a lunatic asylum. We could have invited all our friends to stay there, all your colleagues, all our relatives. We could have incarcerated them there, and you could have hoisted me up onto your shoulders, and I could have peered over the wall at them and spat a great long globet of golden glittering spit.
Delgado?
Yes, sir.
I'm in a good mood, Delgado. My spirits are soaring.
Good for you, sir.
Only a day to go, and I can smell the island.
So can I, sir. I can hear it, too, way out there beyond the horizon.
Can you indeed?
Oh, yes, sir. I can hear it chuckling and cackling, and sometimes it lets out a long, low wail.
You are a man of great sensibilities, Delgado. Kindly bring me two large glasses of Skipper's Peak cocktail in readiness for Lady Edith.
But I did not go down to the saloon for cocktails. I did not appear at lunch. I spent all afternoon locked away in my cabin, preparing for the last night party and concert. A stone house with a mansard roof, long boats bobbing in the swell, the steamer skulking in with the mail, the lady without a governor, the ship rocked slowly in the lingering swell, my toothbrush rattled in its glass, stroking each other's limbs softly in the firelight, the shepherd's hut and the fresh gore seeping into the earthen floor. I came down to dinner in my choicest gown. I wore my diamond tiara and my pearl necklace and my brooches of emeralds and rubies. My shoulders were bare, my cleavage was rampant. I sat down slow and stately at table.
Yum, yum, wobbly knockers.
After dinner, I danced with the chief engineer.
Fancy a bit of hanky-panky on the boat deck, do you, missus?
Only too pleased, only too delighted. I danced with Delgado.
Twirly this way, missus, twirly that way. Fancy a bit of...
But of course, Delgado, naturally. I danced with Dr. Spofforth. And afterwards I stroked his limbs. That's all. I stroked his limbs. And in the freezer, deep below in the holds, My Wilfred grinned and twitched his limbs, and a long, slow yawn of delight came to his face. It took me ages to unlock the door of my cabin. I struggled with the key. I pressed my shoulder against the door and heaved and heaved. And then suddenly, quite without warning, it opened. I stepped inside. Pitch blackness. I left the light on, but the whole room was in darkness. I felt a shiver rill up and down my spine. The hair tingled at the nape of my neck. I stood stock still. And then the light clicked on softly, and he was standing there. He was standing there, framed in the porthole. His blonde hair glowed. His cheeks were ruddy and tanned. He wore a spotted kerchief at his neck. He wore moleskin trousers and leather gaiters. His strength and his slowness throbbed and crooned. Tarleton! Tarleton! Tarleton!
There, there, my lovely. There, there.
He took hold of my hand. He led me softly to the bed. And after a while, after a long, long while, he said softly,
"Don't let your mam know what we've been up to."
And then he slapped my face. Quite without warning, he smacked me hard on the face. And I screamed. I screamed, and I screamed, and I screamed! Next morning I unlocked my cabin and I went out on deck. There was the island, like a growth on a wicked neck. I could smell it. Fetid cabins deep in the bowels, tittering dorms aglow with pubescent giggles. I could hear it, shrieks in the darkness making babies, low grunts, shabby sighs. And there were the longboats heaving in the swell. And there was the skipper's peak, its summit furtive in the mist. Seabirds screeched and swooped around us. The island drew nearer and nearer. I could make out the harbour and the houses painted pink and green and white and ochre.
Good morning, Lady Edith.
Good morning, Captain MacWhirter.
I hope the voyage was to your satisfaction and everything on board was to your liking.
It was indeed.
I apologize for the dirty weather. Never known anything like it this time of the year. I hope you weren't too discommoded being locked in your cabin all the time.
No, it was most enjoyable, thank you. The tugboat fussed us and faffed us towards the quay. I felt so strange. I felt giddy and light-headed. I felt purged. I leaned my elbows on the rails. I wanted to spit onto the heads of the tugboat men, but I didn't. I wanted someone to hoist me onto his shoulders so I could see the shepherd's hut on Skipper's Peak. But no one came. And then a small man in baggy houndstooth trousers doffed his limp Panama to me and said,
"My felicitations, Lady Edith. I hope we might establish an acquaintanceship once you settle in on the island."
He bowed stiffly and departed. "Captain MacWhirter, who is that?"
"Dr. Spofforth, Lady Edith. Beware, I beg you. Beware."
We docked. The gangplank was landed. And I saw him waiting there. The slight stoop to the shoulders, the vague, watery smile, the diffident feet, the fumbling knees. He walked up the gangplank. He took hold of my hands. He pecked me on the cheek.
"Edith."
"Wilfred."
"I hope your solitary voyage was not too... Oh, I say, Edith. I say...
"What, Wilfred? What?"
"You're wearing maroon slacks."
"Am I, Wilfred? How curious. How strange." Ho-ho, lads, I'm here. Open the gates. Let the inmates loose. I'm free. I'm free.
In The Governor's Consort by Peter Tinniswood, Lady Edith was played by Mary Wimbush. Sir Wilfrid, John Moffat. Dr. Spofforth, Bernard Hepton. Captain McWhirter, Stephen Thorne. Delgado, Keith Drinkle. The Chief Engineer, Matthew Morgan. The First Officer, James Telfer. And Tarleton, Jonathan Adams. The musicians were Judith Herbert, Kevin Street, and Michael Haslam, who also composed the music. The play was directed by Enid Williams.
There is a dimension of dark secrets and of blinding light, of time without end and the blink of an eye, a dimension of visions and nightmares, of hope and despair, where death lives and the living seek him out. It's a dimension not of the here and now, but of what may be or what might have been. A dimension of the bizarre, the fantastic, and the strange. Enter the seventh dimension on BBC Radio 4 Extra. Sci-fi and fantasy. Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. and midnight.
This is
BBC Radio 4
Extra.
This is BBC Radio 4 Extra, bringing you the best in comedy, drama and entertainment on digital and on BBC Sound. In this hour, we present modern stories, fact and fiction. This includes TED Radio Hour, Desert Island Discs, or 4 Extra's very own Telling Tales and Podcast Radio Hour. And don't forget, we have 2 hours of comedy presented by comedians and the Comedy Club every night from 10. For details of what's coming up throughout the day, head to BBC